worse attacked, and the one wish that remains. Baby, step back, either step up or step back.
Listening to Inkstuds on CITR 101.9 FM. This is the radio show where most of the time we talk about comics. But I don't really know if we're going to talk that much comics today. My guest is Amy Lockhart, whose new book from Drawn and Quarterly, Dirty Dishes. It's got a little bit of comics, eh?
Yep, some comics.
Some comics. But you're not a comicker, are you? Do you consider
yourself? I'm a little bit of a comicker, but not a full-time comicker, I don't think.
Not a comicker by trade.
No.
I guess your main artistic endeavors, to say, would be probably animation?
Yeah. I would say so. And I do some painting and sculpture with paper and drawing and stuff like that.
And they all, looking through the work, they all kind of center around the same kind of visual icons, I guess. Am I right?
Like the ladies?
The ladies with the ginormous foreheads.
Yeah.
Tell me about the ladies with the foreheads.
That came from this... What is it? It's actually in the Dirty Dishes book. There's a piece of packaging. It was from like a plastic doll. Like, I don't know when it was from, but sort of like a budget Barbie doll. And then on it, there's, like, this great drawing of this silhouette of a head. And then from... I was just really into that drawing, and then I just kept redrawing it and drawing different versions of it. And then that's sort of where the lady came from.
How old were you when you first saw that?
How old was I? 26, maybe?
Oh, okay. Oh, I think I found it. Yes, with movable eyelids, head, and arms.
Yeah, and a plastic bikini or plastic underwear. It's a pretty great doll.
Do you kind of, like, search for odd objects, like doing flea markets and garage sales and whatnot?
I do a bit. I try to cut back because I have a small apartment, but I am sort of drawn to weird, like, little porcelain things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Completely useless, amazing little things.
Is there anything, like, particular of the era they come from, or is it just what the object looks like to itself?
It's more just what it looks like, or just, like, when there's something a bit off. You know, like, it's like a processed thing, like, mass-produced thing, made for the masses, but you look at it, and if you're just like, this isn't right, you know?
Yeah. It's just...
That's usually what I like. Or it's like a cute dog or something, you know?
Yeah.
One of those. Yeah.
A cute dog with five legs.
Yeah.
Well, let's start out, I guess, talking about your, I guess, your first little solo book. You've done mini comics in the past, right? Or mini zines?
Done, yeah, like mini zines. Some of them have comics. Yeah, but mostly just like art, little art books, you know?
Mm-hmm. Kind of in the vein, to kind of get folks familiar, I guess, would be like in the vein of what Mark Bell does or Peter Thompson or...
Yeah. Yeah.
Jason McLean.
Owen Plummer.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely
Mark
Owen Plummer.
Mark Connery. Yeah. Those guys, yeah.
And you're actually also in the Naga Dodd book, and the cover is you as well, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of misshapen dogs.
Yeah.
So tell me about Dirty Dishes. What are the Dirty Dishes?
What are the Dirty Dishes? So they were... That was the zine I was doing, and it was a lot of that was with the ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where that came from, but it was like just came up with a name for it. And then I also did this animation where, there's a comic where the ladies, I think it might be in the Dirty Dishes Drawn and Quarterly one. It was in the zines where the ladies are licking these dishes, and the dishes are running away from them, and they are trying to catch them so they can, like, lick the dirty dishes. I don't know. And then in my Walk to Walk animation, I use that too, where there's these little dishes that people often think of them as eggs, which is fine. And they're always running, and the ladies are after them, trying to lick them clean, do their lady work, you know? I don't know. And the book, Dirty Dishes, is... There's some new... It's a sort of like an overview of a lot of the drawings and paintings and some sculptures I've done that deal with just, like, those women, you know, portrayals of women. And also there's, like, a lot of, like, goofy pictures of drawings of guys and stuff in there. And then so that... It goes back a bit, and then there was a lot of newer stuff that I had made for a show I had at La Centrale in the Artist Run Center in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of that stuff in it, too.
It's talking about the dirty dishes, and that there's a big idea, I guess, of kind of maybe post-feminism ideas in the work. I feel like it's kind of like a struggle with identity, or like kind of a rejection of identity. Would that be something I'm just putting in there?
That sounds good. Yeah, I guess... Yeah, I guess. Sure. What is it? I don't know. It's just. I guess a bit post-feminism, sure, and just like the. I try to like figure it out, put it into words, but I find anytime I do, it's just like, oh God, I don't know, you know. But a lot of it too is just. I don't know. Sure, post-feminism.
And maybe I may be using the wrong term, but I guess like I kind of like see it like you're mentioning before the doll that you got from the originally inspiration of the foreheads. It seems like this play with like that Barbie aesthetic, but not going to in that direction.
Yeah,
like kind
yeah,
of
yeah, I guess yeah, it's like a weird version of that.
Yeah,
like it's kind of the sexy pinup girl, but not quite. You know,
no,
like
not.
A bit like screw you too, buddy. You know, maybe I don't know.
Oh dear. Now, when did you start getting into doing animation? Because that's a big part of what you do, right?
Oh, I started that in 1997. I was going to Nova Scotia College of Art and Design, and at the time they were doing film classes through the Atlantic Filmmakers Co-op. So I started taking some film classes through that, and then there was a woman, Helen Hill, who was teaching experimental animation.
Mm-hmm.
And then so I started taking her classes, and that was before, like, back in the day, before computer animation or, like, animation with video cameras and flash was really easy. So it was almost easier to work on 60mm film, which is what we were working on then, with Oxbury stands and everything. So I started making films through that, and she was an amazing teacher and was all about just, like, making stuff and just getting it out there and just exposing people to, like, as many different techniques and that sort of thing. So it all of a sudden opened up this world of just, like, making work and it being, like, really readily accessible and understood and, like, open to, like, a really broad audience where people could, you know, go to a movie theater and pay $5 and see it, or, you know, just something that's a little less hoity-toity than art can mm-hmm. seem sometimes, you know? So that was really, I really appreciated that. And then I guess I got a bit disillusioned with art school and dropped out, and then just started, I ended up going to Calgary to the Quick Draw Animation Society, which is one of Canada. No, there's an animation co-op in Toronto too, but it's this really great animation co-op in Calgary, and took some courses there and just sort of like created a path of study and just learned like more traditional animation. And then from there, just kept making films and stuff.
Was Walk for Walk your first major?
Yeah, that was like my thesis or something. I don't know. I had all these smaller ones before that were usually 1 minute or 2 minute sort of thing, which or 6 minutes. And then that one was the big 10 minute one with lots of like planned out movement. You know, it was like mm-hmm. using over 1,000 hand painted cutouts and stuff like that. So it was a bit of a insane project.
I couldn't imagine the work that went into that.
It was pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. I went to, what was it? It took about a year to do all the art. And then I went back to Quick Draw because it was on film, so I had to go someplace where they had a camera. And then just spent maybe 4 months filming. It's like 9-hour days, maybe 5 to 6 day weeks, and just sort of sleeping at the co-op. You know, it was just a bit insane. And then I finished filming it and then ran out of money and then returned to Vancouver and then wrote some more grants and got money for the sound and stuff like that. And built a... keep going with the stories. Built
No, I'm really curious about it because it's really an odd cartoon.
Odd little work.
Yeah.
And the sound... So I started working on the sound and I just got Pro Tools. Do you know that? It's mm-hmm. like... Well, the M-Box, you can, it's like a sound recording thing you can do with your laptop and computer. So I got that, and I was like, oh, well, I'll just record in my living room. And then I didn't realize it picks up, like, so much. I could hear my neighbors and, you know, the computer and everything. So I built an isolation box, which is like a mini version of a sound booth in my living room. And so it was basically like almost like a cardboard insulated fort, but the cardboard was made out of this sort of drywall, but it's drywall that's paper pulp. It's made to resist sound. So it was like layers of that was dead air space, insulation, another layer of that, and then inside was covered with egg cartons that just deadened the sound. Then I had this crazy like two-layer door that we would pull in to close it all up. And then on one wall, I put in this double-layered plexiglass window that was about 4 inches by 6 inches or something. And I could look through that and see my laptop. And then my laptop, the mouse wire was like coming through a hole, and then the mic wire or the Pro Tools box wire was coming through a hole. So I had a mic and the headphones in there, and I would like look at the image going by and sort of record like a little toy in there sort of thing as it went by, you know, and then do that until there was no air left, and then I'd go out and take a break sort of thing.
That sounds maddening.
It was pretty crazy. And then once there's one voice on it of the crying kitten, which is Frances Devlin, who lives in Vancouver. When she was, I don't know, she would have been 7 or 8, maybe. But she came over and she was recording the sound with my friend Alex, and they were in there recording it. And then she was like, "It's too hot. I need to get out." So I felt really bad and let her out of the box, you know. Yeah.
It's like some kind of medieval torture device / recording studio.
Yeah. Would child it, labor.
Well, the kid's got to do something, right?
I know. Teach some character. Right?
There we go. It'll make you stronger in the long run, kid.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to do a quick song break. Okay. Any particular track you'd like to hear? From?
No, go for it.
Okay. I think I'm going to play Sundown. So we'll be right back. Ink Studs, CITR 101.9 FM.
I can see her lying back in her satin dress, in a room where you do what you don't confess. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping round my back stairs, sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping round my back stairs. She's been looking like a queen in a sailor's dream, and she don't always say what she really means. Sometimes I think it's a shame when I get feeling better when I'm feeling no pain. Sometimes I think it's a shame when I get feeling better when I'm feeling no pain. Picture every move that a man could make. Getting lost in her loving is your first mistake. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping round my back stairs, sometimes I think it's a sin when I feel like I'm winning when I'm losing again.
Scenic Drive, every Friday morning, 10 a.m. till noon, CITR.
We're back. Inkstead, CITR 101.9 FM. I'm chatting with Miss Amy Lockhart. Next week on the show, I'm hoping will be a conversation between me and Jordan Crane and Sammy Harkham about Jordan's new website, What Things Do, which features comics by those two boys, as well as many others, including Ted May, Steve Wiseman, and tons more to come. How you doing, Amy?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. It's a lovely, warm Vancouver day here. We haven't actually experienced winter very much this year, so.
Snowing here. Little mini blizzard.
Oh, Montreal, yep. The land of poutine, yep. And hot dogs and everything else wonderful in life.
Yeah.
Now, we were just talking about Walk for Walk. I'm curious, what were some of the animations you saw that kind of made you want to do animation, or were there any?
It made me want to do them. Probably a lot of Helen Hill's films and Trixie Sweet Middle's films, and then Helen's, because they're just very handmade and just really like really interesting use of objects, and then Trixie's. Because one of hers, La Mujer Lagartija, was a super big influence on me, and it was just the simpleness and the like the goofiness of it, and just using sort of like a brute drawing style. Just seeing people make stuff that isn't like so slick, like Disney, or you know, when stuff is so slick and so well done, it almost seems like alienating a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, just that whole thing of accessibility again. So, just being like opened up to just more handmade, like personable films. You know,
I kind of feel like that you've got this. There's this aesthetic in kind of the circle of folks you're kind of connected with, your contemporaries, where it's like. Not quite a rejection of fine art per se, but the kind of art should be open, maybe?
Yeah, I think it's more just like recognizing that art isn't just like one thing, that it isn't just this institutional high art idea of art, but also things that are created, like mass-produced things, those are just as valid part of our culture, you know, or even more so. You know, and there's the Harry Who. Do you know those guys from Chicago?
No.
Back in the 70s? There was this great group of artists, and I'm going to totally misquote this. Excuse me, but it was something like they viewed the comics as like the true American art form. You know, just this idea that I don't know. It's just something nice, like this recognizing like this sort of like outsider art, or that. That like interesting draw, like just that everyday things are valid, you know, like mass-produced things are valid, and just like that excessive, like sometimes when things are elevated just because they're hard to get, and it's sort of like a false reality a bit, you know, like a bit Emperor's New Clothes, like, oh, this is so important because it's so stiff and hard to understand and rare, you know, and that's easily to access, so it's not valid, or I don't know.
You know, it's funny though, because like I've heard, and this isn't my personal viewpoint, but I've heard that also describe of like the Naga Dodd work by some folks that kind of see it as like, is this art, like, or is this just a bunch of guys doodling on scraps of paper together? So it's just interesting hearing that and kind of seeing.
Yeah, because it could be used. Yeah, because it could be seen as the same thing, like that scene of drawing thing. But I think Naga Dodd, to me, it represents more of like a historical thing of this moment that happened in time when, like, zines were around, like before websites, before like blogs and stuff. People made zines, and then a lot of the zines were, you know, like writing and stuff like that. But then there was this other part that was sort of like art. Little art books, you know, and it just seemed like such a weird thing, like people trading art books, you know, like a different way to express yourself, not just, you know,
well, someone
eat
can
the
go
rich,
and
fight the man, you know, like it was sort of this You know, so and it just seemed like just this blip, this really interesting blip in time where people, before it was even recognized, before like the Royal Art Lodge and all that stuff of drawing collectives, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's really interesting because there wasn't that recognition, so it was more like pure intentions or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like it was a bit more like outsider arty. So that's why I think that stuff's interesting.
How did that work for you in the kind of influence of being around these other folks and kind of trading little art books and representing within your own work?
Pretty big. Like, that thing was going on, was well on its way, and then I came along and was like, oh, wow, neat, and joined in, you know? So I think it was just sort of opened it up to, because the school I went to, NESCAD, is a pretty conceptual school, and a lot of them, the art created there was very, like, a bit dry and conceptual, you know? So it was a bit, like, that idea of art and just, like, oh, geez, really, is that what it is? And then to see, like, same thing with the animation. Like, oh, wow, there's this whole other world that's people just make things and, you know, share them sort of thing. And just, like, the same with the art book. Like, oh, people just make, like, really interesting things and you can do this, you can create. I guess it's a bit. That NESCAD conceptual thing, too, was also about creating other ways to show your art. So, like, these books, in a sense, were that a way of doing that, too. So it was just, like, just seeing these interesting networks and people just creating their own networks and audiences.
I gotta say, there's something, like,
inspiring.
Inspiring and profound about, like, say, a 16-page Jason McLean little tiny photocopied book, which just has so much inspiration going through that.
Yeah, yeah. Or 10-page Owen Plummer book to represent Vancouver. Yeah.
Well, chasing...
yeah, there's something, yeah, it's pretty amazing when people are so, both of those guys are like so dedicated, you know, to like just making stuff all the time. Like it's a pretty amazing thing and not, and like it's just like, I'm always impressed by that and always like admire that when people are just so driven by something that's really immaterial and really not, you know,
it's
like, I don't know.
It's fascinating because it is like you said, like a snapshot at time, like looking at what all of you are doing, like looking at your work and kind of comparing that to seeing where you are now with the art show you just did, or like Owen, who's now doing like illustration for, you know, a fashion line in England.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's all this, it's really just, yeah, I guess.
Or Jason doing the isn't he decorating the buses for the Olympics? Did I get that right?
I have no idea. I haven't talked to him in a while. It would be nice to see something nice at the Olympics.
Yeah. But yeah, it's neat how like that. It's nice to see it too when people's stuff gets appreciated and gets like infiltrates other worlds, you know? Yeah.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your art show that you just did. What was it called again?
What was it? Give Up the Ghost.
Give Up the Ghost. I was really fascinated. I was looking at someone took photos of the stuff in the show. The collagist. I'm really fascinated by that one. That one just like blew me away. It's this like kind of, it seemed like a meeting of your animation with cartooning work in this, I don't know. The parts move.
Would you like me to tell you about how that came about?
Oh, please.
So Trixie Sweetvittles, who I'd mentioned before, she was working at the California Art Institute, the summer school program, and she asked us to be artists in residence. So we figured out that was our way of collaborating. So Mark, at the time, Mark, he still is doing a lot of, like, collages with drawn bits, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So then I did a sort of a recreation of his hands making a collage, one of his collages, and then the collage bits, we both drew, it was like 50-50, sort of, he drew half, I drew half, he cut up little bits sort of thing, and a lot of the pieces were cycles, like loops, you know, like a hand waving or something. So I would just replace the piece and it would sort of have a drawing on top of it that was animated, or it would just be like a shape that would, like, a blob that would move around. And then, oh yeah, and then the storyline was very simple. It was just like two hands putting it together, and then they smoke a cigarette and relax, but then the cigarette lights the collage on fire, and they take the cup of they drink some coffee, and then they take the cup of coffee and put the fire out and then wipe it all clean, and then it just starts over again. And then that was created using, one of the first times I used FrameThief, which is this shareware program. It costs around $30. There's another one called iStopMotion. And you can just hook up a video camera or some still frame digital cameras and just capture stuff and, you know, just two desk lamps or anything, like a very simple setup. So that's how we did it.
It's fascinating. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about putting together that show. Is that kind of to correspond with the release of this book or just kind of something independent?
That was actually, the book was after that. That was a bit of the release, the finishing The Collagist. Mm-hmm. That sort of went with that and just a show. You know, I had a bunch of paintings and some like papier-mâché style sort of a sculpture that I'd been working on.
Like the bust in the back of the book?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And some crochet, too.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't in the show, but that was something I had done before. Yeah, that was a crochet of one of the ladies that was in the Walk for Walk animation.
Did you ever watch Jodorowsky movies?
No, who's that?
Alejandro Jodorowsky. He did, like, The Holy Mountain and
I'm really bad with the names. Sorry, yeah, The Holy Mountain, that was funny.
And El Topo, it's just, it kind of reminded me, your limbless figures kind of reminded me a bit of that. That mutated.
Interesting, yeah.
He likes to use.
That's where they all go on the mound at the end, and they're like, oh, it was a dream.
Yes, something like
that. I was like, you guys are hilarious.
You crazy people.
Yeah.
It's a lovely movie, if people
have
haven't seen
it. Have you ever seen Cabin Boy? By any chance?
Cabin. Is that the Chris Elliott one?
Chris Elliott, that's a great movie.
Doesn't it have, like, David Letterman in it, too, or something?
It does. David Letterman does a cameo. Ricky Lake's in it. Shark Boy, there's a man who's, like, half shark, half man, swimming around.
I think Andy Richter's in it, too.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. The ending's a little ridiculous, but it's pretty great. Oh, I think even Roseanne Barr's crazy ex-husband, isn't it? I think.
Tom Arnold.
Or maybe not Tom Arnold. Maybe her husband from the Roseanne show.
Oh, John Goodman.
I think John Goodman's in it. I'm not sure.
Was that movie influential on you?
It's a great movie. I'd love to make a movie like that.
It takes a certain level of... Crazy, I think, to come up with that movie. In a good way.
And then I heard it sort of ruined his career, which is sad.
It's too bad. Yeah,
I don't get it. It was amazing.
I don't know. Now Bobcat Goldthwait makes crazy depressing movies, so what's this world coming to?
Yeah.
I'm going to do another song break.
Okay.
Any particular choice, or should I just play whatever I feel like?
Whatever you feel like.
Okay. We'll be right back. Ink Studs, CITR 101.9 FM. Here's some more Gordon Lightfoot.
Seven islands to the high side of the bay, across the bay, to the sunset, through the blue light of a fiery autumn haze. We went walking on the high side of the bay on a chilly morn, and we saw how leaves had fallen on the beds where trees are born. Any man in his right mind could not fail to be made aware. Any woman with the gift of wisdom would not see her answers there.
the high side of the bay. If you're looking west to the sunset, you can see it all in fiery autumn dress. Any time would be the right time to come up to your cliff bows. Anybody with a wish to wander could not fail but to be aroused. You got chicken to go, you're in luck. Fortune will not find you in your mansion or your truck. Brothers will desert you when you're down and shit out of luck. Around at the morning, guess you're doing the best you can. Surely you know that when you go, nobody gives you a hand. Think of the air you're breathing in, think of the time you waste. Think of the ride you're on and consider the frown on your face. It's time you try living on the high side of the bay. You need a rest. Any woman or a man with a wish to fade away could be so blessed. Fortune will not find you in your mansion, turn to gold. Brothers will desert you when your nights turn long and cold. If you feel it, you better believe. Every nation's gonna be shaken, put it together, don't let it slip. It's time you try living on the high side of the bay. You need a rest. Any man or a woman with a wish to fade away could be so blessed. Seven islands to the high side of the bay, across the bay to the sunset, through the blue light of a fiery autumn haze. To the sunset, through the blue light of a fiery autumn haze.
Inkstuds, CITR 101.9 FM. Amy, I have to ask, what's with Gordon Lightfoot?
I think I was trying to come up with the four songs, and then I was looking up the Seven Island Suite. One, I couldn't remember the name. I'm very bad with names. And then I found a whole song list, and I was like, I just filled up my whole song list.
It's very good and Canadian of you.
Good Canadian. He's a good dude. Good singer-songwriter, you know?
He's a national treasure.
National treasure, yeah.
I think he is. I don't know. Do we have national treasures in Canada?
I'm not sure. I think so.
Okay. So what do you have that you're working on right now? Curious.
Right now, I am trying to make a live-action film with some animated special effects. And it's based on the Dizzler comic I did for the Gansfeld.
Mm-hmm. The Japanida edition, right?
Yeah, the Japanida edition. So it's pretty much based on that one. And then I've been writing grants to try to get funding, which I found out about in March. And then hopefully I get some money so that I can make it, or else I'm going to try to make it with no money, which
sucks.
Will be very uncomfortable.
Did you read a lot of Dazzler growing up?
No, that one, I found that the Dazzler, I might have found that at Gabe's comic shop or some comic shop in
Lucky's
in
on
Vancouver.
Main Street.
Yeah, I might have found it at Lucky's at, like, the Dollar Bin. And then I think it might have been there. And then I like the Dollar Bin because you can get a bunch in a series,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I found a couple in the series, and then I just read it, and I just thought it was like, just a really funny and ridiculous character. She's the Dazzler, and she's suffering. She just wants to be a pop star, but she's been, like, she has these superpowers, so she's kind of, like, deal with that. And she also roller skates everywhere, which is really great. And then there was one scene where she's like on the grass in a field by a waterfall, fighting these evil people, but she's still got her roller skates on. Anyways, it was really funny. She's like, "You can't roller skate on grass, Dazzler. What are you talking about?"
You know? I'm always surprised. So, like, I know some people that are madly obsessed. Not obsessed, but love the Dazzler comic. Like, Robin Bougie, we would go shopping together, and I think he'd have better taste. Not that Dazzler's a bad comic, but he is, like, scrounging down to find every issue and then gets them bound into big books.
Oh, no way.
So
I have some issues he might be interested in.
Are you done with Dazzler?
I think I'm done with Dazzler. I've moved on.
What other comics are you loving?
Oh, I just got into Dick Tracy.
Oh, nice.
Last year I got one of those compilation ones of a bunch that were done, and they're pretty amazing. They have great, like, the Chester Gould guy's a maniac right-wing guy, but
as
it translates into comics, it's pretty great. Like, these great evil women characters, which is so rare, you know? It's usually, like, the innocent woman, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, they're just great. Like, there's this one, Crewy Louie, where this woman has, like, these great huge bug eyes, and she has sort of, like, a mullet crew cut. She, like, kidnaps Dick Tracy's baby and, like, runs up a tower. I don't know. It's great.
And well ahead of the curve in haircuts, I see.
Pardon me?
He's well ahead of the curve and predicting
haircuts. I know, totally. Where did he come
She'd probably
from
be
Crewy
some
Louie?
Like be some Montreal hipster now.
Yeah. There's also really great deaths where it's like that whole American or whatever thing where it's like the good guy is strong and he overcomes all these evildoers, but he never really, like, kills them or something, you know, or, like, he doesn't kill them without warrant, or I don't know, like, he would be fighting someone and the evildoer would, like, fall out the back window, and in one time he speared himself on this flag. There was, like, this part of this monument to dead soldiers. It was pretty amazing. Like, it was this awful, gory death created by Chester Gould for his Dick Tracy character, yet Dick Tracy had nothing to do with it, you know? It's just like, it's pretty great.
It's terrible, but wonderful.
Yeah. Terrible, but wonderful.
Oh,
yeah.
Wonderful. Now, what was your interest, like, we didn't go back this far, but what was your interest in going to art school at first?
I think I just always did art, you know? So, I think when I was in grade 5, I wanted to be a vet, but that didn't last too long. And then I just always did art, so, like, art school, you know?
It just seemed like a natural
thing, and then it was, you know, there it was, so.
Do you feel like you kind of, that people like Paper Rat, that's kind of contemporary to what you're doing right now?
How do you mean?
Just like, do you kind of feel like part of a new kind of different animation community? Like an alternative animation view.
I actually felt a bit more like an old fogey.
Oh yeah.
Compared to them, mostly because I started out on film and stuff like that. So, and doing more like I'm really into like tactile, hands-on sort of thing where you can see the paper and see the sort of like human touch sort of thing. And then I see Paper Rat; it's totally amazing. But it's just a different version. But I do kind of see how it relates a bit. It's like, it's still with that, it's a different version of that whole recognizing, like, mass-produced things and, like, sort of using mass culture as a influence or inspiration or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I do, yeah, I think they're similar, but it's what I just said. Yeah.
Tell me about your rejected Kramer story.
Oh, yeah. That was not a diss at Kramer's. I just wanted to name drop Kramer's in the book, and then I thought it'd be funny if I put rejected.
Yeah.
But that one, it was created for Kramer's, and it was spread out, like it was badly laid out. It was the first, I think it was the first sort of color comic I had done like that, so I just created all these panels separately and then just cut them out and put them on this really ugly brown tie-dyed construction paper sort of thing. And it was just like a lot of wasted space. So it should have been like a 2-page story and maybe it was like 10 pages. So I think it was like either put mine in and take out two people or put in two people and, you know, take mine out. Sort of,
yeah.
Which is understandable.
Do you, so you worked out your cartooning chops more with Dizzler?
Yeah. Work the panel out. Study the panel.
Do you think you'll make more comics?
I think so. Yeah, it's a great way to just create stories. Yeah.
Is it kind of, do you use that process towards creating the animated work? Like
the animated work, yeah, the animated work is all storyboards, too. Like for Walk, a lot of that was like really, it has to be storyboarded because it's film, so it's everything that's shot, like in Walk for Walk, is exactly what's under the camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in exactly that order. Like, you can't really mix it around like you can with these new fandangled computers. but yeah, I think it's a good way. And it's a good way to just sort of, like, visualize a story, like making a Dizzler into a film. Like, you just, like, gives you an idea of space or just organizing your ideas and stuff like that. So
I'm kind of kicking myself because I knew the story was in there and I kept going, I gotta go grab that, gotta grab that. And I'm on the bus here today. I'm like, I forgot it.
The Dizzler one.
Yeah, the Gansfeld.
Oh, that's all right.
My bad. So,
you're bad, yeah.
I'm fired. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Amy.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me.
I think we're near the end of our time slot here. I really enjoy Dirty Dishes, and of course I enjoy Nagadod as well, and both wonderful books that more people should check out. So, thank you.
Thank you.
And enjoy your blizzard.
Yeah, enjoy your temperate climate.
I will. Thank you so much, Amy.
Okay, take care. Bye.
So once again, that was Amy Lockhart I was yakking with. Her book is Dirty Dishes from Drawn and Quarterly as well. You can find more of her work in Nagadod from the fine folks at Conundrum. And it's also a great collection of stuff with a lot of the folks we're mentioning, Jason McLean, Owen Plummer. And I think you can also get it from Picturebox, who also carry Gansfeld, the Japan edition. Up next at 3:00, we have Japanese Music West, followed by La Connexion Francaise. I don't know. Did I get it right? The French Connection. Thanks, y'all, folks. Remember, next week, Jordan Crane and Sammy Harkham will be talking about What Things Do, hopefully. Week after, I'll be playing an interview with the very interesting, much to say, Zach Sally about his book, Like a Dog. See y'all later.
Alone upon the sidewalks of despair, 'twas there she wandered. With her suitcase in her hand, her fate she pondered. Only a go-go girl in love with someone who didn't care. She met him on a night so rare when her friends were there and the band was grooving. When he gave a glance that said how much he would like to meet her, how was she to know at the time he would mistreat her? In her cage she danced for him, although 100 eyes would turn her way. And before the set was through, he knew she would be his loved one. Only a go-go girl in love with someone who didn't care. Only 21, she was a young girl just in from somewhere. In Michigan, in a group they call the Intended. With a kiss and a promise, he was gone, the song was ended. But as she walks, she waits for him, the pavement is a shoulder for her tears. But in her heart, she knows there is no way she can hope to change him. Only a go-go girl in love with someone who didn't care. Only 21, she was a young girl just in from somewhere. Only a go-go girl in love with someone who didn't care. A go-go girl in love.
Morning.
Good day to you, sir. Hey, wait a minute, what the hell?